This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, president. For more than 20 years, helping people look forward to their retirement years with confidence. Now, today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, January 30th, 2017 edition of Invest Talk. And as always, we are here to help you make better money decisions, help you become an above average investor, even though maybe you are an average investor, right? So we want to help you rise above the ranks of what normal people do, which is make rash emotional decisions. And we want you to make good, sound, logical decisions and hopefully help you bolster your investing in money management skills. And that's what we're here to talk about. So we're ready for your questions and any money matters that are on your mind. Don't hesitate to call and ask, no matter how simple they are or complex. We've never had a question that we can't at least give you some sense of an answer and some perspective. Now, if you were to write a job description for an investor, what would be number one on the list? You know, investing is an endeavor that involves an infinite number of data points. And in today's world, almost unlimited amount of options. So the job of an investor is to filter all this information and make a rational decision about their money. And I know the process can be daunting, but anyone with time and discipline is very important, can be successful. You know, people who are not successful usually do not have a defined plan laid out. They make their decisions based on what they heard from their coworker or their cousin or their brother, and they're not making it in context to their whole situation, what their risk tolerance is, what their investment time horizon is. They're not understanding the asset class they're investing in, the risks that are involved. So no matter what your strategy is, there are two areas of expertise that all investors must constantly work to master. There's fundamental and there's technical analysis. Now, fundamental comes down to the numbers, the industry, the semantics to how an asset moves, right? Or the price of a company will fluctuate. What are the pros and the cons, right? Technical analysis is about understanding price movement and trends. And that will give you a good idea of whether now is a good, average, or a bad time to be in a particular asset. Now, fundamental analysis is probably the hardest to grasp because there's so many factors to consider, both qualitative and quantitative. Qualitative analysis breaks down any attributes of a company that cannot be quantified, right? There's balance sheet numbers and there's things like that. Those are quantitative. Qualitative has to do with brand strength, right? Apple has a strong brand. But what is that really worth? It's hard to quantify that. So that's qualitative. Maybe the patents, right? The value of their patents. Well, that's kind of nebulous to how applicable those patents are today versus how applicable they'll be in 5 years from now. Leadership, CEO, C-suite management team. How strong are they? Are they in it for the long run? How transformative can they be to keep the company moving in the right direction? Then there's industry positioning. Are they a high-cost producer or a low-cost producer? Then there's strategy towards the marketplace or technological edge. These are things that are qualitative that you have to understand, but you're never really going to get an exact answer on what the value of all those things are. Now, quantitative analysis relates to any factor that you can put a number to. Balance sheet, income statement, growth trends, cash flows, profitability, dividend, debt levels, efficiency, etc. So the goal for all investors, both professional and amateur, is to build a picture of the company in your mind and determine the strengths, weaknesses, risks, and opportunities that arise or that apply to that company. Then you have to determine the valuation in order to decide if this is a good candidate to buy. And don't ever think that you're going to get the holy grail of how to value a company. There isn't. There never will be. Right? Now, the quantitative numbers, you can throw some formula around and that will give you a number. But is that the right formula A? How is the future of that company going to be compared to where it is today? And that has to be taken into account. But then there's those quantitative or those qualitative factors that I talked about that might boost that value based on that formula, or it might take away from it, just depending on all those different factors. So there's never going to be a perfect right answer of what value you have for a company, but it's good to have some basis of what you think it probably is worth. So don't ever, you're chasing your imaginary tail if you think you're ever going to master what the best way to value a company is. There just isn't a perfect way, and there never will be. Okay. Now, technical analysis breaks down the price trends of the stocks, and all investors want their stocks to go up in the short and long term. But these things move in ebbs and flows, and you have to be prepared for that, understand that, and certainly you rather buy when it's ebbing and reap the rewards of the flow to the upside, right? Rather than when, you know, a lot of people get hyped up and excited when it's going up and they panic out when it does eventually ebb. And these are just the trends that you have to understand that happen in the marketplace. So many times a company looks great based on the numbers, but the market will reveal that there are problems with maybe the qualitative factors around the business that might push the price of the stock down. So healthy price action should give you more confidence in the conviction for that particular company, that particular stock. Now, no stock is perfect, but you have to have all the facts, understand these facts before you pull the trigger. And keep in mind when doing your analysis with whether that's fundamentals or technical, and you know, fundamentals tell you what to buy and technicals tend to tell you when to buy. And if you can line them up both correctly, you should be able to do well over time. Now, do you have a question about evaluating a stock, a company? You can check in right now or anytime with any money question that is on your mind. 888-99-CHART is our number, so we'll try to answer your question on the next Invest Talk if you leave your message, or you can call in live 4 to 5 Pacific time. And we're going to do that now. We're going to talk to Dan in Palo Alto. How are you doing, Dan?
Hi, doing good, Justin. Thank you. Given the political change here, would investing in gold and uranium, I was looking at both of those, the self-sufficiency goal of our president, would those be recommended? Or?
You think you've missed the coal rally. Coal's rallied dramatically, and coal really tends to ebb and flow with the price of natural gas more than political aspirations, although that certainly is a factor. But you know, coal and natural gas for power plants are kind of used as substitutes. So when the price of natural gas goes low enough, usually power plants kind of switch over to coal and vice versa. But there are a lot of regulations around coal, so some cannot do that. But ultimately, I think for coal, I think you are kind of late to the game. Now, uranium, that's a little bit different of a story. That certainly has rallied recently, but I think that you have a much better chance of making more money in the short to medium term in uranium than you would in coal.
Thank you. Okay. We'll check that out.
Okay.
That's good. Appreciate it.
Thanks for calling, Dan. Awesome. 8899 chart is our number, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question. And hopefully you can do that before the hour is up. We have about 45 minutes left in the show, but it goes by pretty quick. So get your call in sooner rather than later. Now, I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor, Justin Klein. So let's have a conversation about your money. What's on your mind? What are you thinking about? Could you get better performance from your 401k? That's what we're going to talk about here coming up. 8899 chart is how to get through to me right now. That's how you get through to ask your question today. Let's go to Art in Menlo Park. How are you doing, Art?
Good, Justin. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a quick question on primary residence when you sell the house. Can you get $250,000 if you're single out each time you sell a house, or is there like a time frame, like 2 years or something like that?
If you've lived in the house 2 out of the last 5 years, if it was your primary residence 2 out of the last 5 years, then yes, you get a $250,000 write-off if you're single for capital gains, and $500,000 if you are married.
Okay, can you do that more than once, or is it capped at the one time?
As long as you've lived there, yeah, you can do it as many times as you want, but it has to be your primary residence 2 out of the last 5 years.
Right.
So say, for example, you could have lived in it for 2 years a couple years ago, and you rent it out for 2 years, and you sell it,
right.
It still applies because you've lived there 2 out of the last 5 years.
Okay, so then let's say you moved into another house that you purchased. So then after those 2 years are up, you can do the same thing then, it sounds like.
Yep.
Okay. That's all I need to know. Thanks a lot, Justin.
Okay. No problem, Mark. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Mike in San Jose. How you doing, Mike?
Good, thank you, Justin. I purchased some Terra along with you guys, and looks like it's taking a little hit after hours. Are you still holding, or what are your thoughts might be?
I'm not seeing a big hit after hours. What did you see?
Yeah, it's down like $4. Supposedly they came out with some news.
Oh, okay, I gotcha. Yeah, I mean, it has rallied a little bit. We've bought it for income program a few weeks ago, I want to say, and we I'm still mulling it over for another program that we have, our dynamic growth program. So I think this could be actually a good buying opportunity. My number was more around 30, and I think it's going to probably maybe get close there tomorrow. So I would say I still think long term. Teva will be fine, and I think it's going to be volatile. Anytime you are near a bottom, right, you're going to have kind of these big fluctuations like this, and I could see this happening. If it can just close down tomorrow, a lot of it depends on how it closes tomorrow. If it closes near the bottom of the day, low of the day, then I think that's a big worry. But if it can close in the top 50% of the trading range for tomorrow, I think that's a good sign for Teva that it's close to a bottom.
Okay, great. Thank you, sir.
No problem, Mike. Now we're headed into part two of our Monday version of Invest Talk. And plenty of time to get your question in. Our direct line, as always, is 888-99-CHART to talk live between 4 and 5 Pacific time. Once again, that's 888-992-4278. Now, even the best savings plans can hide significant risks or, let's say, cost. So we're going to check in with your own 401k and see if it contains these hidden dangers. That's one of our main talking points today, but I have some other ones as well. One is, what is the impact that higher interest rates are having on the housing market? There's been a lot of data, so we're going to go over that and see what that means and what that likely means for prices and the attractiveness for the sector overall. I also want to discuss the strong dollar And is that really driving down our economic growth? And I would argue it is. And we're going to talk about how it's doing that. And then finally, the President Trump's tax, a proposed tax on 20% tariff tax on Mexican-made goods to pay for the wall. What industries would suffer the most, and what would be the, I guess, the best case scenario in this situation and the worst case scenario? So we're going to discuss all those as well. But ultimately, I want to hear from you. 8899-CHART is our number. 8899-24278 is how you get through and ask your question. Now let's take a quick look at the market today. We had the Dow down 122 points, the S&P was down 13, and the NASDAQ down 47. It was worse earlier in the morning, and you had a small rally to close the day, but ultimately it was a solid down day, and it gave back. We've given back most of the gains that we saw in the market last week. And not quite there, but I do think, especially with what's going on with the travel ban and the contentiousness that's creating in Congress, I think it's going to be an issue, and not necessarily in and of itself, but he's going to create some bad blood. I think he is creating some bad blood within Congress that's going to potentially risk the passage of some of the things he wants to do economically and some of the things the market likes or wants him to do economically, which is cut taxes, do an infrastructure bill, etc. And this could put that in jeopardy, or maybe even he could be distracted by certain elements of his actions over the last couple weeks. And that could derail some of those things and maybe push them off longer, maybe into 2018. There's already talk about the tax reform not coming till 2018 now, and the market doesn't really like that. And then, you know, the trade wars. I think trade wars would definitely hurt the global economy overall, and I don't think that would be something the market would like. And so I think there's a decent risk in the month of February for the Trump bump to completely reverse itself. And I think that'll be very interesting to see. And I think if we get below 2200 on the S&P, I think that is very, very likely. Now let's go to Jim in Seattle. How you doing, Jim?
Hey, Justin, I'm good. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
So I have a question. I bought a ProShares Russell Inverse ETF. The symbol RWM. Yep. And I bought it around 60, and now it's fallen since everything's happened to about 50. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of looking to sell it, but I'm thinking maybe there'll be a pullback. So just wondering what your opinion is on that.
I think you should probably wait closer till mid-year. I do think we'll have a pretty protracted retrace of this recent move, so I wouldn't panic out of it now. I do think that the tempering of the Trump optimism is just starting, and I think it'll eventually probably turn into the Trump pessimism, and that's probably when you want to cover or sell this position, because I do think you'll at some point this year there will be a protracted pullback, and everyone's going to feel very negative about the economy or about Trump, and that's actually probably going to be the best time to be long, and that's when you want to get out of this short ETF.
Okay.
So I wouldn't panic out of it now.
Okay, I'm trying not to. Thank you.
I know it's hard. Thanks, Jim. 8899-CHART is our number, 8899-24278, and I believe we're going to go to one of our Invest Talk listener line calls. Is that correct? Oh, we don't have time. Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit. I'll talk quickly about some of the risks that are hiding in your 401k plan. When I talk about risks, it's more about what structures in your 401k can be detrimental to your financial health over the long term. And a lot of it has to do with a lawsuit against Edward Jones. And this involves allegations that they forced plan participants to pay higher fees for their investments in record-keeping services. And I'm actually in the process of helping a current a client right now move their account away from Edward Jones because they're just not happy with them. The fiduciary rule, the Edward Jones is getting out of this business as, because of the new fiduciary rule. And it's something I think you all should kind of go to your HR representatives and figure out, is the plan you're dealing with good or not? Because it can suck a lot of fees and a lot of costs out of your plan on an annual basis. Remember, this isn't a one-time thing. If you have a bad plan, this happens every single month, every single year. All right, so we're going to talk about that after the break. This is Invest Talk. Remember, we're not all about stocks and bonds. You can bring your questions about real estate, personal finance, whatever it is. We want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART is how to reach me right now.
Our podcast will continue now in just a moment. Here's good reason number five for a portfolio checkup with Steve.
Many portfolios I look at are weighted in just a few or one or two sectors.
A diverse mix of market sectors is so important to the health of a retirement portfolio.
I still see the tech portfolios that they think, well, tech is where the growth is. You have to have a balance in there. You don't ever want to be more than maybe 15 to 20% in any one sector.
Steve can help you reorganize your retirement portfolio. He can make suggestions about the sectors of the future. And if you'd like, a KPP financial program that fits your goals and life situations today. To schedule your one-to-one, one-hour checkup with Steve via Skype or telephone or in person in California, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab and then Portfolio Review or call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. Looking forward to our next Invest Talk. The mortgage industry has gone through some changes lately. Learn the opportunities and how to capitalize on them. What you need to know to get a mortgage in 2017. That's next time. But right now, you're welcome to set the topic. Check in at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. This is Bruce from New York. Thank you both for being such terrific teachers. I will be making my annual IRA contribution for myself and my wife and are undecided between two types of international investments. In today's market, would you prefer, what would your opinion be in investing in either a Vanguard FTSE Emerging Markets Fund, which is like VWO, or Vanguard International High Dividend Yield ETF? I think there's two examples of those that are out there right now, which is VYMI and VIGI. I'm just sort of undecided as to which international investment to go in today. Thanks very much. Have a great day.
Well, it's hard for me to give you an exact answer because I would like to see your whole portfolio. And this is what we talk about is understanding each investment that you're making in context, your whole portfolio. Do you have a lot of dividend paying stocks? And that might be okay. And you might be okay to add it if that's part of your goal. And you sound like an older gentleman. So you're probably looking for, you probably want to have a portfolio that's maybe a little bit lower risk. And so then I would go with the dividend fund, like VYMI. Now, from a longer term value perspective, I think both are pretty good, but I think emerging markets are probably better, right? So I would really like to look at your whole portfolio, what your goals are, et cetera, what your risk tolerance is. That would be very important for me to give you a sense of where you should put the money. If I had that information, I can give you the answer. Because you sound like an older gentleman, I'd probably lean towards the dividend yielding fund. But once again, I need a little bit more information. Okay. So if you want to email me, you can go to investtalk.com, click on the contact Justin button. It'll create an email that goes straight to me. And that goes for anybody out there. If you have any questions about anything, you can also send me an email that goes directly to my inbox. via investtalk.com as well. Now, we talked before the break about the lawsuit against Edward Jones, and I would say if any of your company's owners are using Edward Jones to administer their plan, there's probably going to be a lot of changes. You might be going through that already. And that's true for Morgan Stanley as well. They got hit with a lawsuit for their breach of fiduciary duty. And really what's happening in the industry is that there's a lot of kickbacks that you don't really see. There's high fund fees that you have in your plan. And if these advisors, quote unquote, are getting kickbacks in the back end that you don't really see, but it amounts to a lot of money, especially on an annual basis. So if you're looking at your plan lineup, and most plans will have a dozen or more funds available, if those expense ratios exceed about 0.5%, then you should probably investigate whether that's justified. Now, if they're above 1%, that's a major red flag. So anything below 1, I say, you know, that's not terrible. Below 0.5 would be great. You can justify between 0.5 and 1%, but I don't think you can justify over 1% in today's environment. So what are the conflicts of interest that are happening within your plan? Talk about that with your HR department. It's very important, because if there are conflicts of interest, odds are they're making bad decisions. They're making decisions that are not in the best interest of you and your fellow employees. So, and that usually is in the advent of higher fees on the funds that are available. For example, Edward Jones was putting participants in the Lord Abbott Bond Debenture Fund, LBNYX, and their expense ratio was 0.62%. Well, they could have put them in the exact same fund with a different class of funds with a lower expense ratio of 0.53. But they didn't, because they're getting kickbacks. See what I'm saying? So that's what happens, is they put you in a fund with a little bit higher expense ratio and they're getting that kickback. And that's not necessarily in the best interest of you and your company and fellow employees. Then there's also cash balance funds. There should be a cash balance fund available to you instead of just a money market. And then lastly, are they limiting you to too few of asset classes so you can't get a good diversified portfolio? I think that's important to understand as well. So those are the red flags or considerations you should have when looking at your fund lineup and the plan you have at work. Now, looking at Steve's checkup calendar, he will be in San Ramon tomorrow, January 31st, for individual retirement reviews for a limited number of our listeners. His schedule is already filled up then, but there may be a spot open last minute if you do want to call. I think he may have one opening up, I'm not sure. And sometimes there's last minute cancellations, you never know. So he'll also be in San Jose, February 8th. That is a week from Wednesday. He will be up there in San Jose. And of course, you can make a time to meet with Steve via Skype or telephone anywhere that you are. So that's also available as well. If you'd like to set up a time with Steve on those dates or another time, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, and then Portfolio Review.
Learn how to capitalize on economic and political shifts in 2017. How to prosper in a year of change, 2017. The most recent webinar is now ready to replay when you're ready. That's just one of a whole library of recorded webinars with Steve and Justin that you can access anytime when you're an InvestTalk insider. Sign up on investtalk.com. It's free.
888-99-CHART, 888-9-4278. Let's go to Joe in L.A. How are you doing, Joe?
I'm fine. Thank you very much for taking my call.
No.
And I'd like to ask about this particular equity that seems to be at support. It's called A as in Apple, B as in Boy, C as in Charlie, B as in Boy. It's a Merrick Bank Corporation. It seems to be doing well, but the timing, is this relatively good timing to pick up?
No, I would not. I would be staying away from the banks at this point. They've already rallied dramatically, and I think a lot of the optimism around the banks is not justified. The yield curve is flattened, and I don't think that this Trump bump will sustain itself. So it's not a bad company. It's not particularly overvalued, maybe slightly overvalued. So it's not terrible. But after this recent jump, I wouldn't be picking it up. I would look for, I would pick it up maybe if it gets back in the low 30s. And right now it's in the mid 40s. So that's where I would pick it up, in the low 30s.
Okay. Thank you very much for your help.
No problem. That was ABCB, Ameris Bank Corp. And they are a bank out of, where are they out of? Georgia. So they're a regional bank. Now let's, interest rates have gone up. This kind of segues well. Interest rates have gone up. And this, no industry is affected more by higher or lower interest rates than the housing market. And most of last week's news was on housing, with some price data and pending home sales. And while data is not necessarily in a free fall, it's enough to limit its potential impact on the GDP growth for this year. And the most likely culprit of the slowdown in housing data, or the quality of the housing data, is higher interest rates, most likely. Now, there are four key housing metrics that are now in for the month of January, or for in January for the prior month. And it appears that there's some modest deterioration in the data, especially on a year-over-year basis. Now, on a 12-month rolling basis, growth rates are down from year-ago levels in all four cases. New home sales, existing home sales, more forward-looking permits, and new home sales data. Now, the fall-off is certain, like I said, is not a disaster, but it means that housing is going to have a hard time matching its contribution to GDP that it had for 2016 this year in 2017. And consumers are already under some pressure, and that means it's not great news. Now, both single family housing permits are down, along with pending home sales, and pending home sales is a pretty good indication of where the market is going. There was more softness this week in pending home sales data. And it was in the month of November, pending home sales were down about 2.5%. And this is a great leading indicator that shows how sales will close for the month of December and January, because usually there's a 30 or 60 day escrow. And if pending home sales are down, that means the actual sales that close for those months are likely to be down as well. Now, year-over-year rolling 12-month data looks even worse. The data shown suggests the market for existing homes continues to weaken under the burden of, there's three problems: low inventory, so not a lot of great selection, high prices, and now higher mortgage rates. And this is going to continue to temper the prices of homes in the year of 2017, as long as rates stay above, 4.25%, 4%, to be honest with you. And while pending home sales are a very good indicator of existing home sales coming up, and the current mortgage rate of 4.32% is a lot higher than what it was just in September. End of September is 3.42%. And that's a big difference in the cost of borrowing. On a $250,000 loan, a monthly payment goes from $1,111 just 1 year ago to $1,240 per month. That's an 11.2% increase in monthly cost in just 3 months. So the market's starting to try to adjust, and I think you're going to slowly see a creep up in inventories. You're going to see the pending home sales to continue to be weak, and actual home sales be weak as well. So you can see in the numbers that higher mortgage rates are weakening, or is weakening the housing market. And that's what you should continue to expect. Not necessarily price drops, but certainly at least sideways movement in pricing. And I think I've said this before, if you get mortgage rates about 4.5%, about 4.75%, you will certainly see a drop. Just more broadly, there's certain, you know, real estate's very neighborhood driven and nuanced in each market. But overall, it's going to have a drag on prices. Now let's get back to our 24-hour listener line, anytime number. Just pick up the phone, ask a question. 888-99-CHART is the number.
Hey, Steve and Justin. This is Mark from Philadelphia. I was interested in Super Value, SVU. It's trading a little under $4. I was thinking about purchasing this stock, long-term horizon. It has a great PE ratio. I like the space. It's domestic. I wish it could help with Trump's protectionism. The one thing is the revenue seems to be declining. If you could just let me know about how you felt about the stock and its long-term growth potential. It seems like it's a good value play. Thanks a lot. Bye.
He's looking at Super Value. SVU is the symbol. And they are a wholesale distributor to independent retail customers across the United States through its wholesale segment and Save a Lot in retail segments. This is a company who's having some issues. Its revenue is down about 5% year over year. It does look fairly cheap. Let me look at some numbers here. You're looking at an operating earning yields of 40%. That's really good. This is pretty cheap. Look at its debt. I want to look at its debt. Oh, I see. So it looks like it's having some debt issues. That's why it is so low. Anything below $5, you need to worry about the level of debt on the balance sheet. And that is what would worry me. If you look at total long-term debt, it's about $2 billion. Total liability is about $5 billion. And it's a billion-dollar market cap. So that is my worry, is that this is having major debt-carrying issues. Let me look at, its current ratio is just barely above 1. That means current assets divided by current liabilities is just barely above 1. So I'm not a fan of this. I think that there's a good chance this is a value trap and that it will likely eventually go bankrupt. So I see what you're kind of looking at, but I'm just not a big fan at these levels. Do we have time for Patrick? Not before the break. Okay, Patrick, hold on. We're going to get to you after the break. And if anybody else has a call, we will get to Patrick first. And then you, we only have about 10 minutes left in the show. So if you're going to call in, you better do it ASAP. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. And the invitation is always open. Like we say, every show, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 888-99-CHART is our anytime listener line. Any money questions are welcome at 888-99-CHART. Let's go to Patrick in Santa Clara. How you doing, Patrick?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing great. What can I do for you?
So I'm looking at NUGT. That's a gold mining ETF. Mm-hmm. It looks pretty low right now. It looks to me as if it's a portfolio of gold mining companies on steroids. I think they use a little bit of leverage on that. And I'm thinking about maybe putting in 20,000 or so. And I just wanted to get some second thoughts before I pull the trigger on that.
Well, they are, when you say that they use a steroids, yeah, they're in a lot of steroids. It's 3x levered. And when you say low, what do you mean by that? You're just looking at the price of $10.09?
That's correct. Yeah. I mean, compared to, prices, back in the past, say even 3 and 5 years ago.
Okay. Well, the reason it looks so low is because this is a leverage ETF, and leverage ETFs are for trading only. trading only. And when I say trading, I'm talking about a couple weeks, maybe a month at the very most you would want to hold this. And the reason it continues to go down, even though gold miners did very well, right? If you go back to the beginning of last year, you know, it rallied dramatically and it's come back a little bit, right? And it's
right.
If you look at like GDX, for example, GDX has outperformed Nugget and UGGT, even though it's because it's even though Nugget's levered, right? And it and GDX is up. And you would think theoretically that Nugget should be up three times as much as GDX is up. Well, it's not because of the convexity and the problems with the way they accomplish the leverage within the fund. So any leverage fund that you're holding should be a trading vehicle only. Now, if you're looking for gold miners long term, you should just be buying GDX, which is the most popular gold mining ETF. That I'm fine with, and I do think gold miners are a good place to be. I think they are. They will continue the rally that started at the beginning of last year. You know, we have the average investor got too optimistic and got in near the high, and as usual, they make a bad decision. They buy high and they sell low, and now the pessimism got to an extreme late last year, and I think it's going to have a great year this year. So I do think in the near term, Nugget will be good and GDX will be good, but Nugget is only a trading vehicle. Don't think you want to buy and hold this for a long term because of the problems with leveraged ETFs. When they go down quickly, they go down a lot. And you saw this with Nugget, right? The high in the middle of last year when gold miners were at their peak was about $35 a share. And this went down all the way to a low about $5 a share. Right?
That's right.
So you can see when this goes against you, it goes against you big, and it's extremely hard to make that up, and it won't make that up over time. So if you're going to buy Nugget, it's a short-term trading vehicle only. I do like it for the next week or two, next maybe month or so. But this is only a trading vehicle. It's not something you hold long-term.
I see.
Does that make
sense? Thank you very much for that, but I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for calling, Patrick. That was N-U-G-T is the symbol. Now, President Trump has proposed a 20% border tax on Mexican-made goods to pay for the wall. And this certainly is not final, and I don't want to get political whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. All I want to talk about is what could this mean for which industries? And U.S. retailers in the automotive industries would disproportionately bear the cost of this border tax based on the current trade flows. Now, if all imports in the first 11 months of 2016 had been charged this 20% duty, U.S. importers would have paid about $54 billion in tariffs. And that's obviously a lot more than the estimated cost of the wall, which is about $15 billion. So computer parts, televisions, and wireless routers are among the top imports from Mexico that would cost U.S. retailers about 20% more under a Trump's proposal. Now, a border adjustment tax would be worse than a tariff. The tariff is just charged on the profit. A border adjustment tax is paid on the full cost of whatever that import is. So companies like Walmart, Target, Best Buy, and Costco would face billions of dollars in extra import costs under either a border tariff or a border tax. North American auto sector is very integrated with what's going on Mexico, and they would pay about $19.5 billion annually for this bill. So they would be affected the most. Now, time is up for this hour. Let me repeat something I mentioned at the top of the hour. The people who are not successful investing usually do not have a defined plan laid out based on risk tolerance and investment time horizon. Can I help you with that? If you have a question you'd like to ask me directly, send me a note. Just go to contact Justin on investtalk.com. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, executive vice president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And on behalf of Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for being with us. Let's talk again tomorrow.